Welcome to today's episode of Journey to There, exploring the intersection between personal and business growth. And now your hosts, Tracy DeForge and Russ Reba.
Tracy, you sent me the topic on today's show, and I thought to myself, if this is not the intersection between personal and business growth, nothing is. Breaking bad habits. Little things like, as a child, biting your nails, or, you know, when you see the kid pulling his underwear out of his butt. Work with me. They happen. They happen. Moms, dads, get your kids the right size clothes. Especially the underwear. How many adults have not broken those habits? Mind you, I haven't been in a board meeting or anything like that where I see my associate in a suit pulling his underwear out of his.
But have you been in a boardroom where you've seen one corporate executive give another corporate executive a wedgie? Now that would be even more interesting.
But I have seen, with the biting the nails, I see plenty of adults doing it. And it's one of those little bad habits that carries over into your adulthood. I can't wait to hear about how these personal things intertwine with growth in business. Along with Tracy DeForge, I'm Russ Reba. And yes, the intersection between personal and business growth. Sorry, I can't get the wedgie thing out of my head.
with the pinstripe suit. That's my favorite.
That's the slogan of Journey to There. Intersection between personal and business growth. And this is the Journey to Their radio show. It seems we're picking up listeners from around the globe via iTunes and SoundCloud, as well as those that listen right from the website at journeytothere.com. I think we all have bad habits, Tracy. I'm going to put you on the spot here, like you love how I do.
Oh, no. Okay.
Here's your question of the day. What's the bad habit that you are currently trying to break? And I know it's not biting your nails, and I know it's not pulling a wedgie out of your...
You better be careful after this episode now that idea is planted. Okay, so you would think that I would have brought forth this concept or thought before I opened the mic. I should have known you were going to ask me that, but I was just too busy thinking about other things I wanted to say.
The important stuff.
Right. But however, I think this ties in with our topic in that what I'm working on right now for a bad habit change is my use of the words kinda and sort of and shoulda and woulda.
Wait. I'm going to go back to some of the episodes. What about the use of the word absolutely? That's your
Oh my God, absolutely. You're so right.
That's your favorite.
I want to sit here in this moment and take a pause to just say I'm sorry to our listeners.
Absolutely. It's okay.
It's become so evident to me that might be my radio show favorite word. So I will absolutely try to rein that use of that word in.
Please.
Okay. So my speech edits are my bad habits that I'm working on right now. But what's interesting is that when I chose this topic and when you go to the website and when you go to iTunes, you'll see that I actually named the episodes Breaking Bad Habits Are Harder, not just hard, but harder. And the reason why I added the extra little ER is
I was just going to ask you, harder than?
Yes, yeah, harder than just starting out without them. And a lot of that really is because if you think about bad habits, yes, there are definitely a lot of them that are formulated in childhood. But what is interesting about not the habit itself that's formed in childhood, but the reason why it's formed. And usually the reason why it's formed is as a result of stress or boredom. And then as you grow older, your habit might change, or in some cases could be consistent, but the reason does not change. It's still as a result of being under stress or being bored. And as a result, your default is to go back to, let's say, eating or, you know, whatever those things that you
smoking,
kind of fill that gap of time.
Yeah,
smoking, yes, that's a huge stress for people who are under stress. They have a very difficult time quitting smoking because it's their go-to when they have anxiety and it helps relieve their stress.
Well, think about it this way. You have a smoker that's going through an attempt to quit smoking, and then something in their life happens that's very stressful, and it's like, I'm sorry, I've got to have a cigarette right now.
Oh, Oh, I know. I've heard of people like keeping like the emergency cigarette in the box or in the glass jars, like don't break glass in case of emergency. And there's really no joke to that. The thing about it is that when we develop these habits, and some of them are healthy habits, which are good habits, but some of them are actually, most of them are typically unhealthy because they are something that we used to do. And here's the key. We use these bad habits as a way to change the way we feel. So you may not necessarily be comfortable in a situation. It's causing you anxiety. You step outside, you smoke a cigarette, and these days we don't really have a lot of smokers because the message has actually gone and gotten through most people how detrimental that is, but that does not mean that we're short on other bad habits.
So you would say it's a crutch.
You know, I would say it's a default behavior is what I would say, because if you think about it, like if you're feeling uncomfortable, you're feeling anxious, like let's say, for example, let's go to a whole nother different direction about technology. For example, I've talked a lot about technology addiction in that ties in with my work addiction, which means is that I always really need to feel like I'm accessible. And if you send me an email, I have to return it in 3 minutes as opposed to, you know, up to 3 days and that type of thing. However, technology can also be used as a way to avoid silence and sitting with your own self, because it used to be, let's use a doctor's office, for example. A doctor's office in the car used to be two of my really great thinking times, because we didn't have technology. So if you're sitting in a waiting room, unless you felt like chatting it up with the person next to you, which I normally never did, that was a moment to literally like sit quietly, catch my breath. The same with situations where you are have an opportunity, like in the car is such a good example, because when you drive long drives or even short drives around the block, you had this quiet time that you could really sort of get your thoughts together and have creativity come into your thought process. Mm-hmm. Now all of this is alleviated because you can go anywhere, pretty much anywhere, and have technology. Like you can get in the car and turn on the phone. My husband said the other day, he said, do you realize that every single time you come home, you get out of the car, you're on the phone, you walk in the door, you're on the phone.
Oh, yeah. It's almost a sickness. I saw a commercial that was a little funny, and in the family, in the house, the internet was down, and it was 3 minutes without internet or 10 minutes without internet, and the family was breaking down.
Right.
They were losing their minds.
And, you know, think about this is one of those habits that was a good habit that would be great to bring back again, which is the idea of the family dinner, because that was a time of the whole
family
where
dinner.
Family of four could actually sit at a table and share a meal without being on an iPad or, taking a work call or sending a text. And I saw, I don't know where I saw this actually. It doesn't really matter because I don't think it's an original idea. But they had this where they had to put all their technology in a basket, and the basket had to sit over, you know, not within arm's length distance of the table. I think it was actually a commercial for something. And then the little girl, she's got her iPad kind of under the table, and they bust her and they say, you got to put it in the basket.
Yeah, when we're at the dining room table, we're device free. My question for you is, when you go to bed, how far away is your smartphone from your pillow?
I think I may have been misleading about what habit I was trying to break now that you're bringing that up.
Busted.
Why in the world I do not go to a Dollar General type store and buy a very inexpensive alarm clock, I do not know. Because my justification, air quotes, Russ, is that my phone has to be here because it's my alarm. And that is absolutely not the truth.
There's a do not disturb mode, and your phone should be in a distance where if your little text chime goes off or whatever, it has to be where you have to get out of bed to check it, because eventually you're going to say, you know what? I want to sleep, and I'm going to put this thing on silent mode.
Well, you know, this is absolutely
gotcha.
So right. Gotcha. Oh my gosh. Okay. Darn.
For those of you, for those of you who just tuned in, one of her bad habits is the use of the word absolutely, and not a detrimental habit to have.
My name is Tracy. Absolutely DeForge. Okay. So what I was going to say is that is a perfect way to transition into one of the debates, if you will, over changing habits. Are they based on the ability to do it with willpower, or are they genetic, and are you predisposed to certain habits? Hmm. Or if you have this habit, let's say you do get it genetically, so to speak, like in terms of like alcoholism and drug addiction, there's a lot of science around that. But at the same time, there's a huge divide amongst people who think any bad habit you have can be altered by willpower and discipline, and don't really take into consideration that if you can't do it through what discipline or willpower, that means that you're weak, or that you're not strong, or that you're not committed. And so it's an interesting topic. I sit in the gray area of this, because I do believe that there are some bad habits that if you are born with them genetically, as in like alcoholism and drug abuse, then it's a lot more than willpower. And that's one of the things about breaking bad habits is harder. So if you know your genetic history and you just honor that and you don't start out doing those behaviors, then they're a lot, then, you know, you don't have to break the habits of them. But then let's say you don't really take into consideration the genetic component of it, and you do get yourself in that situation, being committed and having that path doesn't necessarily mean willpower is going to fix it. And so there's just like this catch 22 about it.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of truth to what you're saying, and I think a lot of listeners would agree with you.
And the other thing that's interesting about that is the whole idea of what's called this habit loop. And I don't know if you've ever actually heard of that, Russ. I
no.
have to say that I've heard of the process. I just didn't actually know that there was a name for it.
Is this like a vicious cycle?
Well, it is, in that, so what happens is, with what's defined as the habit loop, is that you start looking out for cues to stop doing what it is that you're doing. So let's say, for example, that you have decided that you're going, I'm just going to use this as an example. It might be something I'm doing. Can't admit to it one way or the other right now. But let's say you're just trying to quit eating sugar and maybe some carbohydrates too. So you're just trying to eliminate. You're trying to reduce, not necessarily eliminate.
Right,
But let's just say you want to change the habit of eating dessert after dinner. So you identify what is the cues for you. So I've heard, for example, I mean, I'm not a smoker, but I've heard, for example, that smokers, it's really hard to quit because when they get in the car, they're used to like firing up the car and firing up a cigarette at the same time. And also like when they're in the morning, when they're having coffee. So there's like these triggers associated with the behavior. And so let's say for this example, this habit loop, you are trying to quit sugar and you realize that some of your cues are that you just have adjusted your palate, literally, that it craves sugar after a meal, or that it's your go-to. Maybe if you're under stress or feeling quite emotional that day, chocolate fixes everything. And so the first identification process of this habit loop is to identify what the triggers are. So most people think, okay, I know what the triggers are, and then I can just eliminate them. The key to breaking the loop is not identifying them and then stopping to do them. The key to breaking the loop is identifying the why, right? So the trigger might be, let's say it's popcorn, for example. The trigger might be that you are really trying to watch your calories and watch your carbs or whatever it is. You're just on a diet, whatever. So you go into the movie theater and you smell the popcorn. Oh my God. Or the walking through the mall, you smell the Auntie Anne's pretzels,
it's
right?
It's done for a reason.
It's done, right? But here's the thing. So your brain gets the trigger and the craving, and then you say, I'm not going to do that. But then somehow you end up at the counter ordering the big jumbo box with the big large Coke. And so if you had stopped in that moment and said, okay, I'm not hungry. Why do I feel this way? Am I, you know, and just pause and just really try to identify not only that you've been swept in by the trigger, but why do you want to perform this behavior that you know is not good for you? And then it becomes a lot easier so that the payoff isn't quite as good, right? You're kind of ruining your food buzz when you're like, oh, I just want to eat this because I've had a really bad day, or I just want to eat this because I got my feelings hurt, or, and then all of a sudden it's just not that appealing anymore because you understand the why.
You know,
that's the habit.
It's funny you say that because it relates going back to, for instance, my five-year-old. I was reading a book to him. You've heard of Berenstain Bears. I'm reading a story, and Sister Bear is biting her nails, and it's getting really bad. So you're biting your nails. You got to stop. We got to figure out a way to stop. So they put this, they paint her nails with this, some kind of citrusy type of thing that doesn't taste good. So she stops biting her nails. Then she starts biting her nails, and she says, I got used to the taste. So then the little brother bear says, well, wait a minute. I just noticed every time we start talking about fractions. Now, mind you, I'm reading to a five-year-old.
Same principle.
Right. Every time we mention fractions, you're biting your nails. So instead of putting a Band-Aid on it or some nasty-tasting citrus stuff over the nails, they figured out what the root of the behavior was. And what they did was they taught her how to properly do fractions, you know, for her homework, and she stopped biting her nails. So they went to the root of it instead of trying to mask or Band-Aid it.
Exactly. And the other part of that is, and this is really probably the most important part of closing the loop on the habit loop, is that you have to replace the behavior with something else. That is one of the things I think that really comes down to the difference between willpower and discipline, is that if you are accustomed to doing a default behavior during a time of stress, anxiety, emotional fear, anything that surrounds those moments, not feeling comfortable sitting with yourself in silence, then you, once you identify what the triggers are and you understand that the triggers are happening and that you're doing the behavior as a result of trying to change the way you feel in this situation, then the real key to the success of this whole circle is that then you find something else to replace that particular behavior.
All right, so in the I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
So we're talking about biting our nails, let's say. Let's say we're biting our nails or I'm biting my nails, and it's just habit. And all of a sudden I've got to break it. I see my hand going towards my teeth, and I say, whoa, I got to stop. How do you put what you just said into play with replacing it with something that would be more positive?
In that situation,
it
is a tough one, because you could be biting your nails in a public situation, like we're reverting back to that boardroom, and instead of giving the executive next to you the wedgie you referred to, you know, you're sitting there biting your nails and you don't want to do anything like stand up and do 10 jumping jacks right in the middle of the meeting. That would be somewhat embarrassing and pretty inappropriate. However, what you could do that would be a lot more subtle, and I'm literally making this up, but I think it could work, is that you could take your hands, like you intermix them, and then you turn them like outwards. I wish we weren't audio right now,
Rachel,
but like you stretch your arm out with your arms, your fingers interlinked. And so you have this movement, or you take your hands, what might be a simpler thing to transfer from radio to live in person.
I hit the microphone because I was doing yeah,
I was doing what you're showing. I was like, I thought you were about to fall out of your chair. I didn't want to say anything. So that's why I went down a different path. This one might be easier. So you have you ball up your fist and you close them. You ball up your fist and you close them. You ball up your fist and you close them. You can do that pretty much anywhere. And you can do that until the feeling passes. And so that's just a small, subtle behavior modification.
No, it's a great example. I personally like the boardroom jumping jacks, but no, it was a great example.
Well, yeah, those would be a little more dramatic, yes. But the whole open your fingers and closing them, open your fingers. And just, and like we have said in other episodes before, sometimes you only have to do things in small increments of time in order to see the change. So if you counted to 10, you know, like just open and close your fingers for 10 seconds, more than likely, and you know, this is a theory I just developed literally on the spot.
No, but I like it.
Do you think you would see a difference? And I like this idea of how to do this, like in the business environment, because of course, one of the things I have always been committed to. And the reason why that I developed the concept of the show is because it's not all personal and it's not all business, right? So you have that habit. You're about to be making a big presentation or you're having to do something and your old default behaviors come back. You need in that moment to be able to find something to do that is still somewhat professional. But the other thing about habits in business is that they're not necessarily about breaking a habit that is a personal, tangible thing. They're also about changing behaviors that become habits in business and realizing that they're not serving your business anymore. I have a workshop and I speak publicly on a topic that's called The Choices We Make Determine the Business We Create. And I'm just going to say that one more time. The choices we make determine the business we create.
That's interesting.
And it's all theoretically speaking, and how to encompass that is to basically get the bottom line is that if you keep doing the same things over and over, you and expect different results, that's not going to happen. Now, we've also heard that in the definition of insanity. Yeah. And I think they're synonymous because if you keep making these choices in your business that aren't serving you, you will feel crazy and you will feel like a crazy person. And then you'll feel like there's something wrong with you. And then it's all this whole perpetual critical voice. And that is a loop nobody needs to get into. The other thing about it, and this is something that's sort of out of the box around breaking habits, but it comes back to the whole breaking habits are harder, and that is to build it out right the first time. A lot of that is I speak about is about building your brand and getting the foundation of your systems and everything off the ground the first time so you don't have to go and redo them. But this also applies to behaviors and bad habits in that you can get in a bad habit of your hiring practices. You can get in a bad habit of your communication styles, of how you handle situations. And they can create problems in your business that you really didn't even know were happening because it happens over time. The other thing, and I think you're going to like this one because it involves a sports car, but have you ever heard or have you ever actually seen a Tesla? Do you know what they are?
My brother-in-law he was on a waiting list for over a year and he just got his. And
Did he get his?
He told me this is the Tesla X, and he told me the story. He just had to take my nieces to the airport, and he said, Russ, I drove all the way up the interstate and I didn't put my foot on either pedal the whole ride on the interstate. It's crazy.
Well, for the listeners who have not seen or heard of a Tesla, they are a premium electric vehicle. We'll stop there for the sake of time. But what I wanted to share about that in a business practice is that Tesla, the company Tesla, they only hire, now get this, this is so fascinating to me, they do not hire anyone who has ever sold a car in a dealership ever.
I love it.
So they do not. And here's the other interesting thing. They only hire salespeople that were in the hospitality industry. And that is because why? Because if you're in the hospitality industry, you pretty much know at your service, happy to do it. Customer's always right.
Let me tell you something. They are such a threat to traditional car dealerships that in some states, it is outlawed to sell Teslas. The way I phrase that might be a little inaccurate, but just Google it and you'll see, you know, Teslas illegal to sell in whatever states they are.
Oh my gosh, that gives me the best new idea for another episode. We're going to do a whole episode on disrupting certain business categories.
I love disruption in business.
I love that. So we will make a habit of bringing in that topic again, which didn't even really make sense, but
listen,
whatever.
before we get to Tracy's takeaways, I want to, you touched a little personal part of my life here because I had asked you for an example on how to, turn a bad habit into something positive, like what you do when you're going to go to bite your nail, what would you do instead? And we in our family are going through a little bit of a personal thing one of my sons who has a bad habit. And when you have bad habits, and I'm just going to say, for example, biting your nails, you end up destroying the image of your nails and your fingers, because over time you're getting to the skin and everything. And you have given me a great tool to try out for a habit that he has, and to associate it with something else, not jumping jacks per se, but I can't wait to try it. I can't wait to get home and give him some exercises to work on. Talking to you today has been therapy for me, and hopefully for him. So I love it. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I really appreciate that, because you do gain a lot more peaceful existence in your head if you can get some of these bad behaviors out of your routines. And that is ultimately what Journey to There is all about, in my opinion, is getting peace up in your head.
No, you have to understand something. It's not like we rehearse these shows. These topics come up, and you and I are just discussing things. And one of the things you said tapped into something that's going on in our personal lives and our family. And I'm learning something from you. I'm sure you learned something from me, like how often you say the word.
Say absolutely. Yeah.
So this is not just therapy for Russ and Tracy. It's for you too, the listener.
Right. But hopefully you guys are getting something out of it, even if it's the relief that the absolutely is going. Now I'm in the awareness phase. I got to figure out why I do it, and then I got to replace it with another word. Yeah. So this is future episodes. Please stay tuned.
Exactly. So what you got for Tracy's takeaways?
Okay. So I want to touch on these briefly, because they've been pointed out in bits and pieces along the way. So identifying the triggers, and we talked about some behavior modifications. There's some others that I've seen. I have used this with my clients before when they've had a really bad critical voice that they just keep, beating themselves up all the time. I've had them wear rubber bands on their wrists for a week, and every time they said something negative about themselves to themselves, they had to pop their wrist, and it was really amazing when they would come back in and be like, holy cow, I did not even realize I wouldn't say these things to my worst enemy, much less myself. So just figure out a tangible way. I've heard of swear jars, rubber bands. Writing it down has a tendency to make it very real, because it's black and white. You're looking at it. You can't deny it.
So many people that don't even use a pen and pencil anymore these days because of our devices. Well, you could tap it into your smartphone.
Yeah, I'm a real believer in pen to paper in situations like this, but that's just me.
But you won't sleep more than 2 feet away from your smartphone.
Okay. Anyway,
all right, we're not going
to
go back to that.
Takeaway. Okay. So the two I really want to leave you with, because we haven't talked about this so much, and it's very important. And the first one is to plan for failure. And I don't necessarily want to come across as being negative. What I want to come across as saying is that you're not going to be able to get it done the first time, or that you're not going to be able to modify your behavior just because you say you want to. So you have to almost go into the situation but planning to fail and planning to forgive yourself for failing. And then every time you do is a blank canvas to restart. And so it's this whole thing about you're moving forward. You're not, I guess they use the word, it's a journey, not a destination. You're going to fall off and you're going to slip and it's going to happen. You're going to give in to the popcorn at the movies, but you know what? The next day, start over but don't carry the guilt with you and then just end up beating yourself up and then eating more. So, and then the thing I want to leave us with is something I think is very interesting, yet very underrated, and that is the idea of creating a community and participating in community around these behavior modifications, even if it's a party of two. Weight Watchers is a perfect example. They are the number one weight loss plan in the world, and it is attributed on many factors. They're scientific based and they're consistent, but the one success that they are reason for their success that is the what they're most known for is their meetings. And they actually have meetings in purposefully for people to come in and get accountability and positive reinforcement. And you are more likely to be successful with any change if you have accountability partner and you get positive reinforcement.
Yeah, I like that.
And so I think people think, oh, well, there's not a community for saying words all the time, or there's not a community for moving your cell phone from one room to the next. Although I really do think there should be a 12-step program for technology, but that's for another episode. But you can create your own community and you can create your own accountability partner. And I'd like to just really reiterate that as my sort of most powerful takeaway, because that's where you're going to see the biggest shift in your changes.
I think it's great. And I got a lot out of this episode. All right. I want to go to another awesome comment. I like closing out the shows with comments that we get from our listeners from around the world. I might say most of them here in the United States. But this comes from a listener in Texas in response to the episode Secret to Having It All. She says, wow. Oh, yes, reality check. And it's got the exclamation point. Thanks for sharing this reminder to, quote unquote, stay present and bloom where we are planted. I like her use of words.
That.
We are blooming where we are planted. Along with Tracy DeForge, I'm Russ Ripa, and we sincerely thank you for hanging out with us today on the Journey to Their radio show. Our next show is in the works, so until then, stop biting your nails, stop smoking, kids, stop pulling your underwear out of your butt in public. Adults
and
too.
And absolutely make sure you get an accountability partner and a positive reinforcement.
Absolutely.
We hope you've enjoyed today's journey, and we invite you to visit journeytothere.com to download full episodes, find show notes, and connect with us by signing up for our newsletter. We want to hear from you. Give us feedback or ask any questions by clicking or tapping Contact Us. That's journeytothere.com.